We've told you in the past about the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. It's an enormous, sprawling bureaucracy and is one of the most poorly run departments in the entire U.S. government. Investigators there deal on a daily basis with things like fraud, embezzlement, drug crimes, and other white-collar issues. But imagine going to work one day and learning that you're not needed to investigate these routine white-collar crimes. Instead, you're needed to investigate a serial killer. And even worse, a medical serial killer, a sociopath who works under color of helping patients as a medical professional, a doctor, or a nurse. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Our next guest is that rare person who has seen the darkest part of the underbelly of society. Bruce Sackman is a renowned investigator specializing in tracking down medical serial killers and is in demand as a consultant on the subject all over the world. He's a former special agent in charge of the Northeast Field Office of the Criminal Investigations Division in the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Office of the Inspector General, where he was responsible for criminal investigations in 295 Veterans Affairs facilities. He's a licensed private investigator and is the president of the Society of Professional Investigators. In addition to his professional credentials, he's the co-author of the highly acclaimed book, Behind the Murder Curtain, Special Agent Bruce Sackman Hunts Doctors and Nurses Who Kill Our Veterans. Bruce Sackman, welcome to the show. We are so happy to have you.
Well, thank you very much. I'm actually honored to be here today.
Well, the pleasure's all mine. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. I have to tell you, this conversation is going to be fascinating for me personally. There are probably fewer than a dozen people in the United States who have had a career focused on serial killers, and even fewer who have focused on medical serial killers. Before we get to that specialization, tell us a little bit about your career and about how you got started in investigations.
Sure. Well, I started investigations probably by watching too many Columbo crime shows. You know, not being a big, tough, Dirty Harry kind of guy, but I used to watch Columbo and I said, you know, I could do that. This guy is more brains than brawn. And I really like that. So I started out as an investigator with the U.S. Department of Defense, and I was investigating contract fraud and procurement fraud, and it was pretty interesting. And then Jimmy Carter, way back when, began offices of inspector generals in every federal agency. So every major federal agency at that time, and now just about every agency, has an office of inspector general. And most offices of inspector general are kind of torn two different directions. One is an office of audit, and one is an office of criminal investigations. I was responsible for the Office of Criminal Investigations for the Northeast United States. And I had a tremendous smorgasbord, if you will, of cases to pick and choose from. Because hospitals, well, hospitals are like big cities. And any kind of crime that could occur in a big city could almost kind of happen in a hospital. You know, we had procurement fraud, contract fraud. We had drug diversion. Think of all the narcotics that are in the hospital. I mean, we have the most complex scientific equipment to inexpensive items like diapers and everything in between. And we're very, very concerned about medical records, about the security of medical records. So running a hospital is a very, very complex job. And unfortunately, there's a big opportunity for some criminal activity. Now, at the VA, I must preface my remarks by saying that the overwhelming majority of VA employees are the most honest, hardworking, dedicated, compassionate people you'd ever want to meet.
Absolutely. Okay? Yes.
But that being said, there is a very, very tiny percentage of people that will take advantage of the system. And unfortunately, their victims are our nation's heroes. And that's really terrible. So I was really honored in two respects. I was honored to be in federal law enforcement And I was honored to have a position that looked out for veterans, that actually helped us secure safety and security and the best health possible for our nation's heroes. It was a wonderful, wonderful position to be in.
And you had a long career at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Tell us about the case that made you an expert on medical serial killers. I have to assume that somebody doesn't just wake up one day and decide to start killing people. They operate undetected, sometimes for many years. And we're talking about doctors and nurses here. How did this all begin in that big case?
Well, you know, I'm working all these other cases that I just described. And all of a sudden, one day, my phone rings and I get a call from the chief of psychiatry at the Northport Long Island VA Medical Center. And she says, Bruce, you're not going to believe this, but we have a doctor working here who spent time in prison for poisoning his coworkers. And I'm looking at the phone, and from looking at my calendar, I says, is this April 1st? Is this like some kind of April Fool's Day joke or something? You know? And she says, no, Bruce, this is really true. Now, look, I didn't think in the United States of America you could spend time in prison for poisoning people and come out and be a physician. But boy, I was wrong. And that's what started the story of a Dr. Michael Swango. Dr. Michael Swango killed people not only in the United States, he killed people all over the world. You know, when he was in medical school, John, when he was in medical school, he was known as 00 Swango, licensed to kill.
Oh, my God.
This is by his fellow students in medical school. And they went to the dean and they said, you know, dean, we don't think this guy Swango should really be a physician.
Wow.
And the dean said, what do you know? You're only students. I'm the dean. Mm-hmm. I think he could be a doctor, but I think he needs more training. So let's keep him for about 6 months longer. All right. And the next thing you know, he winds up in Ohio State University, and he's killing people. And he winds up being an ENT, and he actually poisoned his coworkers. He invited his coworkers in. And he says, hey, guys, you know, you look so hot. Have some donuts. And they ate donuts, and they all got sick that night. And he calls them up. He says, tell me all your symptoms. Tell me everything that happened. He's reliving the excitement of poisoning people, not only when he actually put the poison on these donuts, but hearing how they suffered.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that the donuts were actually sprinkled with arsenic.
Oh, my
God. Well, about 2 weeks later, these ENTs are not stupid. About 2 weeks later, he comes in with some iced tea, and they have the iced tea tested, and it's loaded with arsenic.
Wow.
And the police did a fantastic job. And he gets 3 years in jail for poisoning his coworkers. And then he comes out and he's a doctor again at the VA. What? It seems impossible. How can anybody pass a government background investigation?
And have your license reinstated?
Yes. Well, I'll tell you this. This guy is an incredible sociopath. You know, he was an ex-Marine and he got out of prison. And he gave this story. He says, you know, I'm an ex-Marine. I got in a fight. I got in a barroom brawl. But here's a piece of paper from the governor restoring my civil rights. Nobody checked it. Nobody verified it. And the next thing you know, the guy is a doctor again, this time out in the West Coast at a VA facility. And he's doing well. He's actually engaged to a VA nurse. And then the story comes out. And everything turns terrible for him and his fiance. And his fiance, her name was Kristen Kenny, just a beautiful, beautiful young lady. And she goes home to mom and she says, you know, mom, I really love this guy, Swango, but I can't live with him anymore after I heard what happened. You know, but when I was living with him, I was getting all these headaches for some reason, headaches. But I feel better now. And the next thing you know, Swango shows up at the door. And he's so charming. He charms his way back into her life. And about 2 months later, she can't take it anymore again. And she goes to the park. She takes out a gun and she blows her brains out.
Oh, my God.
Well, you can't blame Swango for that, can you? Well, actually, you can.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though she shot herself and the family had the body cremated, they kept a lock of her hair, and her hair was loaded with arsenic. Yeah, Mango was even poisoning his own fiance. Well, to make a long story short, he actually winds up in my neighborhood at the Northport Long Island VA Medical Center. And you know something interesting? He was there on a residency. And guess what? What particular medical field? In psychiatry. That he had to go in front of a board of trained psychiatrists and convince each and every one of them that he should be in the program. And
incredible.
He did that.
Incredible.
And that's when I got that phone call. Mm-hmm. That sort of changed my life. So, and I hop in the car with one of my agents and I go down and visit him. And let me tell you, this guy looked like a movie star. Just got off the golf course wearing his aviator style sunglasses. You know something, John? If I didn't know better, I'd want to introduce him to my own daughter.
Yeah, right.
He's a handsome ex-Marine doctor.
Right.
You know, treating our nation's heroes. I say, come on in, Dr. Zwango, join the family.
Wow.
If I didn't know better. Well, so he's giving me the same barroom brawl story and all. And then when I start challenging him, he's not so charming anymore. And he doesn't want to talk anymore. Next thing you know, he leaves the country. He goes to Zimbabwe, Africa. Mm. When he's in Zimbabwe, Africa, because there's such a shortage of physicians there, he's killing women and children and pregnant women.
Oh, my God.
And they have an arrest warrant for him, but he returns to the United States because he had to renew his passport before he went on yet to another country. And we arrested him, but not for murder, because we didn't have any evidence that he murdered anybody at all.
Mm-hmm.
We arrested him for every federal agent's favorite crime, lying to the government. If you lie to the government, if you lie to a federal agent, you're guilty of a felony.
That's right.
And 3 years in jail for lying to the government. So that gave us a window of opportunity, a window of 3 years to try to prove that he murdered any of our nation's heroes at the Northport VA Medical Center. And that's what started me on that particular journey.
Let me ask you, too, why is it so difficult, do you think, for medical professionals to be able to spot a colleague who can kill in a hospital environment? Medical professionals, of course, are supposed to first do no harm. Is that they're supposed to be healers and not killers, so people generally don't suspect their colleagues of these terrible crimes?
Well, look, if you're so inclined to commit a number of murders, mm-hmm. what profession and what location might you choose?
Right.
Okay. You might choose a profession that kind of gives you the legal power of life and death over an individual. And what professions do we know have that? You know, you might want to take a profession where people take an oath, have dedicated themselves to saving lives. So who's going to believe that in this wonderful universe of compassionate people who have dedicated themselves to saving lives, there's going to be someone hiding in that group mm-hmm. that's intentionally taking lives? It's almost impossible to believe. I mean, all your coworkers have dedicated themselves to saving people. You see miracles performed almost every day in the hospital. And to believe that somebody is intentionally murdering people is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very difficult for the fireman to believe that one of his coworkers is actually starting fires.
That's right.
Right? It's the same thing here. It's a universe of such dedicated professional people that no one wants to believe that one of their coworkers would be intentionally taking lives. And I can understand that. I can understand.
We are speaking with investigator and author Bruce Sackman about his investigations into medical serial killers. We have to take a short break, but you're not going to want to miss the second half of this conversation. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Thank you. current situation that we find ourselves, I think it's a great political opportunity for Africans for the first time to articulate to the world, to say, listen, we have a multi-polar relationships with all the powers of the world, and what will dictate relationships between African countries and those platforms is their national interest. And we've seen that happening at the moment.
Жизнь изменилась кардинально. If you speak Russian, keep your voice down while out and about. Ну, иногда приходилось врать просто в силу страха какого-то. Don't put your homeland symbols on display.
Все, что русскоязычное, то отторгается и подвергается нападкам.
Don't talk to strangers.
Обиди сюда! Avoid
noisy gatherings and rallies.
Меня по сути назвали фашистом. И в принципе меня называют по сей день так называемым термином расист.
Even your colleagues and perhaps also your friends think you're guilty because you're Russian.
Они начинают говорить о том, что мы вас найдем, мы вас знаем всех в лицо. Ходите, оглядывайтесь.
Ответственность коллективная, да, что вот детям достается. Были избиения детей, когда действительно ребенок попал в больницу, и об этом сообщили полиции, то есть это все вышло на официальный уровень.
Весело тут. Тихо летит. Куда полетела?
Брызги, которые тут есть, это брызги от своеобразной волны.
На сегодняшний день водохранилище сработано до мертвого объема, так называемого.
С водой у нас просто ужас.
Мне 70 лет, я уже не могу тягать вот эти баклажки.
Я увидел бабушка, которая шла с пустыми баклажками. Я сказал папе, что когда вырасту, буду находить воду и развозить людям.
Я говорю, хорошо, сынок, завтра начнем, без проблем. Рекорд был 27 бочек.
Если сбой подачи воды, то это угроза для жизни больного.
Pour couper l'eau à tout simplement la population du Донбасс.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We are speaking with renowned investigator and author Bruce Sackman about his work tracking down medical serial killers, those medical professionals who become stealth murderers. Welcome back again, Bruce. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
Bruce, tell us a little bit about motivation. The average serial killer, when one thinks about John Wayne Gacy or Gary Allen Ridgway or Dennis Rader, is a sociopath or a psychopath who becomes more and more bold, often even taunting the police. But that's not the case with medical serial killers, is it? Tell us about their motivation. What leads them to do it?
You know, I'll tell you what I've seen over the years. I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but this is what I've witnessed. I would say the number one reason that I've seen is something called Munchausen syndrome by proxy.
Right.
Now, Munchausen syndrome by proxy is often displayed when a mother will maybe intentionally harm a child and bring that child into the hospital to show the staff what a caring, dedicated, outstanding parent they are. And they're trying to be so compassionate, oh, please help my child, and they want the staff to give them understanding and compassion. Well, in some strange way, this is the same thing with our medical serial killers. Mm-hmm. Many of our medical serial killers, when you look at their evaluations, they're like okay nurses, okay doctors, except when it comes to a code. And a code, I mean an emergency, a code blue. Mm-hmm. And when you read their evaluations, you will see that they get an outstanding when it comes to a code. One of my medical serial killers, Kristen Gilbert, the doctors would say, you know, if I ever coded, I would want Kristen Gilbert there. She starts barking orders at the young interns who are scared out of her mind. She takes control. She's a hero. She's outstanding.
Wow.
And this is what a number of these people want, because throughout their life, they were kind of put aside and they didn't get the attention that they wanted, right? They were never considered, they were considered more zeros than heroes. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, this is an opportunity for them to get the attention that they never had before in their life. They don't care about the victims. The victims is just an end to the means. They care about the attention mm-hmm. that comes to them. And that I've seen throughout the world is perhaps the number one reason, but not exclusively. Some people like Swango just love the power of life and death,
right.
Having the power of life and death over someone. What an incredible high for him. You know, what an incredible turn on that he could act like God, that he had the power of life and death. And that's also common. But there are a few other reasons. Sometimes there's a case ongoing in Texas now where a doctor is just pissed off at management and his coworkers. And he says, you know, I'm the best doctor here.
Uh-huh.
These other doctors can't even compare to me. And you know what they did to me? They took away some of my privileges. They reduced my office. They cut my money back. I'll show them. I'll show them when patients start dying unexpectedly, then they'll realize how important I am. And they will come back to me.
My God.
Pretty.
Yeah.
Pretty.
Yeah,
so
those
are some of the most common reasons that I've seen throughout the world, not just at the VA, but throughout the world.
2 or 3 years ago, I entertained the idea of writing a book about serial killers. I've written 8 nonfiction books. I thought it would be kind of a fun departure. And I especially wanted to talk about their motivation and what made them so bold before they were finally caught. So I wrote letters to 8 or 9 serial killers who were in prison, including some of the most famous names, many of them, including Gary Allen Ridgway, the Green River Killer, the BTK Killer, Son of Sam, Tex Watson from the Manson family. They actually answered me, but their answers were all the same. They said they found Jesus in prison, Jesus had forgiven them, Jesus was saving their lives, they were living their lives for Jesus, et cetera, et cetera. Ridgway even sent me, it was a big package, it had 50 religious pamphlets in it, and he asked me to distribute these pamphlets around my neighborhood. So, of course, I threw them away. But my amateur conclusion was that their manipulative behavior continues in prison all these years later, that this manipulative personality is what keeps them going. They think it's going to get them something to at least profess to be Christian, for example. So my question is that also common among serial killers once they've been caught? And if it is, how are they able to cover it up for so long as they build their medical careers?
Well, I guess that's sort of a two-part question.
Yeah.
The first part involving once they're incarcerated, well, many of them will decline to speak because there are additional murders out there that we don't know about.
Right.
And they get tried and convicted and even receive the death penalty, depending on where it occurred. So they're not going to admit to anything else, all right? Because when we suspect these medical serial killers of killing 30, 60, 100 people, often we don't have the proof on hand that they killed that many people.
Right.
You know, we have to narrow it down to the very, very best cases that there are and pursue those cases. But they know there are other victims out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we should be able to prove yet another victim, especially with some lead that they gave us. They could be retried, prosecuted, and possibly even executed. So they're not going to say anything at all about that, all right? And you know, it's something interesting because when the whistleblowers, in the case of Kristen Gilbert, this is a real example of whistleblowers that had flawed backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some of them had substance abuse problems, they had other personal problems, and they knew this was gonna all come out. But they had incredible courage to come forth and tell us what had happened. Well, what do you think happened after the trial? So Kristen Gilbert, who we allege killed about 30 of our nation's heroes at the Northampton VA Medical Center in Massachusetts, she goes to trial and she's found guilty. And the whistleblowers were just tremendous. We wouldn't have known about it if it wasn't for the whistleblowers. So when they returned to work, do you think that they greeted as heroes, the whistleblowers?
Oh, no.
Just the opposite. Oh. Just the opposite. Their coworkers would say, what the heck did you do to us? Now when people drive by the hospital, they don't say, oh, that's the hospital that saved my dad. That's the hospital that does wonderful science. No. They say, that's the hospital where the medical serial killer worked. Mm-hmm. Why did you have to do that? You ruined it for all of us. You ruined our reputation. Not thank you for getting rid of a murderer. That they've never heard, ever. All they heard was criticism from their coworkers. Why did you call the inspector general? Why did you bring the police in here? Why did you bring all this bad publicity to us?
Wow. Just incredible. Bruce, tell us where people can learn more about the work that you do and about your book.
Sure. Well, the website is same as the name of the book, behindthemurdercurtain.com. It details all the stories of medical serial killers inside the VA that I personally investigated, including Dr. Swango and Kristen Gilbert and others, including a physician in Albany that altered medical records to put veterans into research studies they should have never been in, and they were murdered. Ugh. I mean, there are really some incredible stories in that book. And also, you know, there's a television show out there called, what was it called?
Very Scary People.
Yes, thank you. Very Scary People. HLN. And it has 2 hours on Swango.
Yes.
But I would invite people to read the book, to go to the website, to email me. I get emails all the time from veterans and non-veterans and people who have been victimized by this. And, you know, and it's one thing we have to mention here. There's a whole human side to this, John. You know, we talk about the statistics and the method.
But these are human beings we're talking about.
But for the families... Mm-hmm. It's such horror show. Such. Could you imagine, John, if I rang your doorbell one day and I said, excuse me, sir, you know, my name is Bruce Sackman, and I'm from the VA, and we have reason to believe that your father's death was of a suspicious nature. Mm-hmm. Can I go to the cemetery and dig up his body and run some tests? Mm-hmm. Could you imagine getting a visit like that? Could you imagine sitting in a courtroom and hearing all this evidence of how your father was murdered at a VA hospital after he spent his entire life saving America in the military only to be murdered in a VA hospital? Imagine the human side of this, how you would feel. And sometimes when we talk about the statistics, how many murders and the techniques and all that, we forget to mention the human side of the families, and the families have always been just amazing for me, just fantastic people.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for spending this time with us. This was fascinating, and we were very happy to have you. So I want to thank Bruce for joining us and for sharing his fascinating experiences, and thanks to our viewers for watching. The author Bret Easton Ellis once said, quote, "It strikes me profoundly that the world is more often than not a bad and cruel place." Unquote. In many cases, I'm sorry to say, that's true. But we're fortunate to have people like Bruce Sackman out there doing the right thing. I'm John Kiriakou. Thanks for watching The Whistleblowers. Until next time.